Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We do not have our typical good, bad, and crazy martinis today. No, today starts our very special end-of-the-year political awards for 2017. For the next six editions of the Three Martini Lunch, all the way up to December 29th, our last podcast for 2017, we'll be handing out some very, very prestigious awards. Some of them are things people would consider an honor. Others, perhaps, maybe not. But since we have several categories that are not exactly positive, but nonetheless, they need to be addressed. So today, we are going with the following three categories: the most underrated political figure, the most overrated political figure, and the most honest political figure. So, Jim, let's start with underrated. Who's the most underrated political figure for 2017?
Greg, this was a selection I was not expecting to make and I did not want to make, but I just kind of feel like acknowledging the obvious requires it. I'm going to make Virginia Governor-elect Ralph Northam the most underrated political figure of the year. Make no mistake, Ralph Northam, who was previously the lieutenant governor of Virginia, was boring, vanilla, cookie cutter, vanilla cookies. A complete non-entity as lieutenant governor for the past 4 years. And none of that mattered on Election Day 2017 because he won. He won big by the largest margin for Democrats in, I believe, a generation in Virginia. And he will have a closely divided state legislature, possibly even a majority. Even if he doesn't, once you're close enough, you're basically in a situation where one or two people defecting could end up changing the dynamics within the chamber, both in terms of party affiliation and on any particular given issue. So look, not only could he end up being the most liberal Virginia governor in a generation, he could be the Virginia governor who enacts the most actions on the left's agenda in a generation. That's the sort of thing that gets you noticed. If you can win a swing state, a quasi-southern swing state, and get a lot of progressive policies enacted, Democrats will start saying, hey, why don't we nominate this guy? Probably not in 2020, but 2024, 2028. The sky is the limit for Ralph Northam, and he did it without a single ounce of charisma at all. And so I take my hat off to you in a way, Mr. Governor-elect. I'm not looking forward to your reign, but I don't think there's any way to dispute that it is significant. You rode the anti-Trump fury of Democrats in the state to a big win, and the consequences we'll be living with for at least 4 years.
Yeah, 2017 was not a year of super big elections, but Ralph Northam's victory, I don't think the victory itself was surprising, but as you mentioned, the margin was absolutely stunning. There were polls actually showing the Republican Ed Gillespie with a good shot of winning that race, and by very early that Tuesday night, it was clear that that was not going to happen, that there was going to be a sweep in the statewide races, and that the state legislature was going to look a whole lot different. And quite frankly, we still don't have all the answers on what that legislature is going to look like with all the recounts going on. But my choice for underrated political figure of 2017 is EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, the former Oklahoma Attorney General, is one of the probably the least known people in Washington when he came into the Trump cabinet. His record on environmental issues was well established in Oklahoma. This is a guy who's not angry about the way he confronts the climate change radicals. He simply states that their science is not settled. The fact that they can't even meet their own targets is not settled. And he's gone about going after some of the most aggressive regulations and policies established by the Obama EPA. When you look at some of these things, you've got the Waters of the United States rule. There was always regulations on navigable waterways in the United States, but now they don't have to be navigable at all. It could be a rain puddle in your yard. As long as it's in your yard, the government claims it might have some access to it. And so that means a lot of lost property rights for property owners. He's starting to roll that back. He was really the critical voice in President Trump's ear in exiting the Paris climate deal, even though a lot of other people in the administration, including Trump's own daughter and son-in-law, were desperately trying to get him to stay. And he, of course, has played a critical role in rolling back the so-called clean power rule, which really would have crippled manufacturing in this country. So Scott Pruitt is not a guy who's in the headlines every day, but every time he is, he's doing something that ought to make conservatives proud. So Scott Pruitt, you get that award from me this year.
Greg, you have a much happier choice than I do.
All right, let's move to overrated. There's no shortage of those people in Washington either. Who is your most overrated political figure?
So looking back on the entirety of 2017, Greg, I decided to select Steve Bannon. For quite a while, he was considered an enormously influential White House advisor to President Trump. He was on the cover of Time magazine. They asked, was he the second most powerful person in America? No, I think we can now say that. You know, the reasoning behind this election is not merely that he was an advisor and then got, you know, tossed not too long after John Kelly was coming in to put a little law and order to a chaotic White House staff. Let's look back and remember that Steve Bannon was the guy who enacted the so-called Muslim ban very early in Trump's presidency. He did not coordinate with DHS, TSA, or any other government agency that needed to actually enforce it. The first version got drop-kicked by the courts within 2 days. Now, obviously, we've seen subsequent, more carefully written versions have managed to survive scrutiny from the courts, indicating that, you know, that a version of this policy that could have been constitutionally sound if Bannon and those around him had written it with a bit of a wiser eye towards the legal challenges it was going to face. But no, he didn't want to do any of that stuff. He liked the chaos at the airports and stuff like that. And I don't think that worked very well. Apparently, Steve Bannon was the one who urged President Trump to say both sides were to blame for the violence in Charlottesville, what I think many people would say was the low point of Trump's presidency. Oh, by the way, Steve Bannon pushed Roy Moore. Great terrific record on that. He's also looking at a couple of other collection of candidates that looks like the bar scene from Star Wars. Michael Grimm, who has literally done prison time for tax evasion, running for Congress back in Staten Island. Danny Tarkanian, who's lost his last five campaigns. Bannon just collects these guys, and I don't think any of them are particularly effective in, you know, they may win a primary, but they're generally not all that powerful outside of very particular locations and very particular demographics and things like that. So, by the way, the closing days of the easily forgotten, the last day before the Alabama Senate race, he declared that he was smarter than Joe Scarborough because he went to better schools, or I guess he got accepted by better schools than Joe Scarborough did. Joe Scarborough, of course, went to the University of Alabama, and here's Steve Bannon poo-pooing that while campaigning for more in the state of Alabama. That is my selection. Overrated, Greg. Not as sharp as the all the hype would have you believe.
Jim, not only is that an outstanding choice and a very accurate choice for this category in 2017, but everything you just mentioned fits into this ongoing permanent fight, permanent campaign, permanent political warfare position that we find ourselves in right now that's so infuriating, so exhausting. Everything's a big fight. It's not what Americans want. You want them to wake up over the things that matter, not be engaged at each other's throats over ridiculous Twitter spats and all sorts of other things that happen throughout the year. I love that choice. You've probably heard this from me before, but Jim, this year, even though the election was kind of a shocker, Republicans had everything they wanted. In 2010, they got the House. In 2014, they got the Senate. In 2016, they got the White House. Yes, the margin in the Senate was not that huge. The margin in the House was pretty healthy. And you got a Republican president that campaigned on the same things you campaigned on, repealing Obamacare, radically changing the tax code in a more friendly way to business and to families across America. This was the first time since 2006 that the Republicans had the deck stacked in their favor in Washington. And I guess we should have realized from 2005, 2006, that getting all these great priorities across the finish line was not going to be as easy as we thought. That was the job of the Republican leaders in Congress, specifically Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell in the House and Senate, respectively, as well as their leadership teams. The debacle over the Obamacare repeal is still just absolutely baffling. The House did get it through on its second try. The Senate couldn't get anything through. And yes, you've got some very prickly personalities there, people who love to hear themselves be in the opposition. But in the end, if you're a leader, it's your job to get the ball across the goal line. That clearly did not happen with Obamacare, which led to a lot of additional challenges with the tax bill. Nothing seems to have changed in a more conservative direction with overall spending. In every major legislative fight this year, we were constantly disappointed from a conservative perspective on what was coming forward. They were not as conservative, not as direct as we were promised in the 2016 campaign. They seem to consistently have more government involvement than we would like, less relief than we would like, and it was just very frustrating. They did finally get tax reform done earlier this week, and they deserve credit for that, especially on the Senate side where the margins were much closer. But as I mentioned, that was a lot more complicated as a result of the failure to get Obamacare repeal and replace, or at least reform, done. This was the year to really get stuff done prior to the midterm election year, and then, of course, the rollout of the presidential campaign in 2019. The iron was hot. They needed to strike. And while some things got done, not nearly enough.
That's fair, Greg. Things kind of got better for Republicans as the year wore on, but I think it's safe to say that when we, you know, considering what we wanted to see passed and all the different legislative priorities since since 2006, right, when Democrats took back the House and the Senate, it has been a long, difficult road for Republicans to have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And I don't think it's exaggerating to say that 2017 is underwhelming in terms of the priorities we've seen passed, at least legislatively. Hopefully 2018 will hold better progress, but look, you know, optimism always gets rewarded, right, Greg?
Not in this town. All right, let's move on to most honest. Obviously, the shortest list of nominees each year. Jim, who did you come up with this year?
So I'm going to go with Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Longtime listeners will know she's always been a favorite of this podcast. I think what's interesting is that, first of all, there are two elements to why she's most honest. First of all, is that she has basically been much tougher on China, on Russia, on Iran, calling out the United Nations for, you know, blatant anti-Semitism and demonizing Israel. It's really refreshing. And it's also worth noting that, you know, like her predecessor, Samantha Power, was highly regarded when she went in there. She'd literally written the book on genocide, so to speak. And then she got in there and basically did nothing as Syria turned into a genocidal, horrific nightmare of human rights abuses and mass death. Last estimate is 400,000 killed in Syria. Samantha Power is kind of an interesting example of, you know, you don't be careful what you wish for. If you end up in a position where you're the spokesman for an administration that doesn't want to deal with these sorts of things. Also kind of interesting, Nikki Haley can go off message compared to the rest of the administration every now and then, and at least so far manages to get away with it. She said that back in March 15th, the so-called Muslim ban, she said, look, this is not a Muslim ban. We should never ban anyone based on their religion. A Muslim ban would be un-American. I don't know if everybody in the Trump administration would agree with that. It's been interesting. At one point, you know, Trump kind of lashed out that his ideas had been watered down by the lawyers. And you saw various folks in the Solicitor General's office saying, this is not helpful. But, you know, Haley was able to say, look, we wouldn't go along with something like that. Also, a little while back, she said, you know, women who accuse anyone should be heard. They should be dealt with. Any woman who feels violated or mistreated in any way have any right to speak up. That was not the general White House message about the women who have accused Trump. I think she, you know, but here's the thing. I also think that Trump is very Washington focused. I think she's been doing a great job up in New York, but I also think she's kind of outside of the loop. Think about the coverage and the tone and the way Trump treats Tillerson compared to the way, I guess you could say, the benign neglect that Nikki Haley gets up by Turtle Bay, I believe is the neighborhood that they say the United Nations is in. So look, maybe some of this is a reflection of her position, but it seems like she has a little more leeway than everybody else. And for that, I think she's managed to be one of the more honest political figures in a political culture that is not rewarding honesty for a good portion of 2017.
I think Nikki Haley's an excellent choice there. She's done a fantastic job, and she's been very blunt, very direct, very professional up at the UN. My choice is also in the cabinet. I mentioned Scott Pruitt as the most underrated political figure for 2017. I move up a little higher on the succession chain for this choice for most honest. He's one of our favorites, Jim, and this was perhaps our favorite moment from him in 2017.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
General Mattis. Now Secretary Mattis, the Marine Corps general. Very blunt. We've had a lot of fun with his tears in his eyes quote from the Iraq War, pleading with people to make good on their word or else very bad things would happen to them in Iraq. He's been very solid. He's been understated. He's not a verbal bomb thrower. He's not even much of a literal bomb thrower, except in the case of ISIS, of course, which got wiped out this year and hardly got much attention for that. He has been there when escalation has happened with the rhetoric and the missile testing with North Korea, letting everyone know he's competent and up to the job and ready to work with the administration to do what it takes to keep this country safe. But this is a guy that just exudes competence, Jim. And he's also a guy who just deals it straight. We don't have enough of those in Washington. And Jim Mattis is a breath of fresh air.
That's a really good selection there, Greg. Now I'm feeling a little stupid for not selecting that. But, you know, we've got in all of our various references to tears in his eyes and things like that. And I think that is simply like no one can ever ask that question anymore, because for a while that was one of my favorite interview questions for people who handle terrorism, cyber threats, you know, anything in the national security realm. It was always a great way to say, OK, well, you know, you study this stuff. You're professional. You understand this stuff. What worries you? And of course, no one will ever answer it again, because now they, you know, all want to be like Mattis. But deep down, don't we all want to be like Mattis?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember when he first got nominated, just the flood of positive testimonials about him as a commander. Just absolutely fantastic. So congratulations to all of today's winners. Jim, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again for the next edition of our special year-end awards here on the 3 Martini Lunch.